again by Benning. Darnell Nurse left it in the corner, gets up center. Perry scores! Corey Perry!
Ilya able to shake away from Solani. It's given away to Solani around the front.
All right, we are back with a Saturday morning edition of the Forever Mighty podcast. We're on time this week. Back-to-back weeks on time. Pat ourselves on the back. We're here. And, well, we missed two games this week. Tonight's game against Pittsburgh and St. Louis. But we have three games to cover and one special goal that I know we're going to spend a lot of time talking about. How's it going, Steven?
So, I realized that for the Olympics that they're not going to, Team Canada could take an entire defense corps of pairs that already exist. They could go Taves McCarr, Theodore Petrangelo, and Uygar Ekblad. And I think that would, by about a mile, be the best defense corps in the league.
Who would they be missing there? Would they be missing like anybody stand out? Like, I get like Letang, I guess, but even then, like.
So yeah, I mean, you're kind of looking at like, let's see, you've got Letang, Girard's probably a cycle away. Yeah. Nurse, depending on who you
Dougie,
talk to, I guess.
Dougie, but he hasn't been that great.
Hamilton, you? Yeah.
Honestly, exactly. Like those six guys you mentioned, like those are probably three of the top five defense pairs in the league right now. Devin Taves probably played his way onto Team Canada, I would bet. Uyghur's been great. Ekblad has had a career year. McCarr is McCarr. He's going to make it no matter what. And Petrangelo has had a pretty good run this year too. So I mean, hey, like if you the Olympics, there always seem to be about chemistry. I think there's a report that came out and they said, oh, Marner's not playing well, so he's not going to make Team Canada because they want to go with guys who are playing well. Which, I mean, I don't know if that's the best decision from Hockey Canada, but you see this every time for every team when Olympic teams are picked. There's a few guys who are locks, and then there are some guys who they're not playing well that year. They get off the team, and then guys like Uygur or Devin Taves make it because they're playing well.
Well, yeah, and the other thing, like, right, is if you look at those three pairs, they're pretty much perfectly balanced.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
You're really not going to find a six that does it all the way that does. It's just kind of crazy to me that that's, like, even on the table, which, to be fair, again, is also why I think you guys shouldn't be allowed to talk. Like, you shouldn't be allowed to bitch about Canadian Olympics. No. You could literally leave off, like, the 10 MVP candidates and still probably win the tournament.
Oh, easily.
Stupid.
I'll take it.
Okay, calm down. Calm down. Easily. Shut up.
Well, you guys have the better goaltending, right? So you have that.
Oh, what? You don't believe in Jordan Binnington?
Not a chance. I don't even know. Well, with Price down and Fleury not playing great this year, I don't even know who would be the best candidate for Canada in net right now. But we'll get into that.
Probably still more Tamper Odor, I think.
Yeah, he can come out of retirement and come hang out. But we got some Ducks games to talk about. Three, in fact. The Ducks have started their road trip pretty well. 5 points of possible six on the road so far, with the only loss coming in the shootout against the Capitals. All three games have been one or almost one goal games. I guess the Sabres was 2-0, but really close, hard fought games. I wouldn't say it was the same as the last couple weeks where the Ducks have dominated a few games and come out on top because of it. They have kind of been behind the pace of play, which I guess it is to be expected on the road, but not by a lot. Like, I think in each game you could argue the Capitals kind of control the play for most of the game, but not in a dominating way. Same for Buffalo, but mostly because the Ducks had some tired legs coming in on a back-to-back, and then playing Columbus at home where they're 9-3. On the season is a tough go, and I think Columbus controlled the majority of that game, but again, not in a dominating fashion where the Ducks looked outmatched. But to come out of that, go into three tough buildings and come out with 5 points is pretty good. I mean, the Ducks are continuing to show us that they are for real this year.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy, right? Like, I don't think, you know, obviously when 2/3 of your top line go down, or your first line or whatever, I don't want to get into that, You know, but they lost Rico, who's having a great year, and then they lost Getzlaf, and him and Terry were driving the bus on that. And, you know, my big question was like, okay, what do we see from Terry now? Because, you know, I don't expect him to turn into a pumpkin, but I also think, like, at this point in his career, it's kind of, it's like, all right, dude, like, if you can, if this leap is for real, then you should be able to drag that line a little bit. And he's done a pretty good job of that. But, you know, the fact that the Ducks have just kind of kept rolling and winning, it's just a testament to them. I mean, they're just playing really well right now. And I think, you know, earlier in the season, Dallas Eakins had kind of talked his way into the Jack Adams. And then, you know, they kind of fell down back to earth a little bit. But even then, falling back down to earth, they've still been consistently in a playoff spot. Like, so, you know, at this point, I guess it's just like, between the kids being better sooner than people thought and the defense kind of rounding into form again, and the division being terrible, like, at this point you have to say the Ducks are for real. And you mentioned this on I think it was yesterday's Morning Brew about, you know, the poll I posted as far as what do we think the front office is going to do. And I mean, look, I think the next month and a half is going to be really interesting because it's going to probably have a lot to do with those decisions.
Yeah, well, I don't think anybody would have guessed 28 games into the season the Ducks would have 15 wins and be 15-8-5 and comfortably sit in second in the Pacific. I know Edmonton has some games in hand and they'll probably make those up, but you're still in the top three of the division in front of Vegas, in front of some other good teams. And it's, you know, full value, right? They've done enough to be in the position that they're in. It's not like, you know, years past where the Ducks have started well and it's been heavily on John Gibson and they've, you know, get shelled for 40 to 45 shots a night and he gets them to a 1-0 or 2-1 win. It hasn't been that this year. It's been on the back of the offense, a great power play, very good special teams, some depth scoring all the way throughout, and then obviously some stardom from Zegras and Milano and Raquel so far this year, and then obviously early on Troy Terry, Getzlaf, and Henrique too. So there's just been a lot of depth, and a guy I mentioned on Ducks Morning Brew, I think it was Friday as well, is Isaac Lindstrom, has quietly just taken control of that third line center role and really been you know, one of the Ducks' top contributors at even strength and a penalty kill threat to score shorthanded too. He's got two shorthanded goals on the season. So it's just been a lot of fun to watch these guys this year. Like, everything that's kind of could have gone right has gone right. And you think, okay, Max Jones still isn't in this lineup, and Maxime Comtois still isn't healthy and in this lineup, and Perreault is on the verge of making it, and Tracy's on the way, and, you know, all the prospects coming up in Pastuov and Zellweger and whoever you get in this year's draft, right? So, like, it's coming around a lot quicker than I think we thought it would. I still don't want to get too far in front of myself or too far ahead of myself here and, you know, banking on one season, because I know Sabres fans, we've talked about this before, I think a couple of years ago, where they started like 25-1 or something, and then the wheels fell off. I don't think the Ducks are the same as that team, but in terms of, does this mean they're going to be better next year? Are they going to be the same next year? I don't want to get quite to that yet, because it's very tough to come in and back it up in two seasons in a row. And we'll have to see who's even here next year, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a very weird spot to be in, because, like, the fan part of my brain is like, this is the best. Like, they're in, they're ready, they're ahead of schedule, go for it. Like, let's just make it happen. And then, like, the part of my brain that, like, I very seldomly use is like, okay, but, like, are we 100% sure that this is for real? And, like, it's just very, it's hard for me to, like, try to find the balance between those two kind of thoughts, because, you know, we've talked about it 1,000 times, but it matters. Like, there's some significant, what do you call it? There is some significant pending free agents that, you know, this team has to make some decisions on, and age and timeline and all that kind of stuff comes into play. But it's also, you know, like, I don't know that it, like, I don't know. We talked about this last week, but it's just like, how do you walk into that room and not look at those guys and be like, yeah, you guys have earned the right to keep doing it. You know what I mean? So,
it's a tough call, right? And, like, we're going to dive into this a little bit later when we talk about that poll that you put out and Jeff Solomon. But it really is an interesting spot to be in, because I don't think they expected to be as good as they are, and now you're facing some key pieces of your roster who you have to make a decision on. Like Manson, Lindholm, and Raquel are three key pieces of the core that are still here. But, you know, I think there's some understanding from Solomon and management that, you know, it's a great year and you got to reward the team, but you also have to, you know, stick to the plan here. And, you know, it's a young team that you got a lot of young players on the way. You've got two guys, like we already mentioned, that aren't in the lineup that you have to fit in at some point. There are guys who can step in and replace some of these guys. Maybe not, we talked to this too on the last show, maybe not Lindholm and Manson. That's a little tough for the Ducks. I think they're a bit thinner on defense than they are up front. But I don't know. We'll have to see. Like, I want to get into this, but I think we should save it because we got some plays from this week to talk about. Specifically, we got to talk about that Milano Zegras goal. I want to get into that.
What happened?
Oh my God, I have so much to say about this, and it's perfect timing based off of the Torts comments from last night, which was excellent. But this goal, man, like this is all about what hockey is kind of becoming and what it's supposed to be in the fun in it and getting some personality in the game and some creativity. I love it. I think everybody, I mean, who's a Ducks fan at least love it, and who's not John Tortorella and Rick Tocchet, but like,
so, okay.
You want to do Rick this Tocchet, now?
I don't necessarily think it's fair to say that Rick Tocchet and John Tortorella shared the same sentiment.
Okay, true. You're right.
And the other thing to say about this that I think is very cool is, you know, the Ducks posted to their Instagram that, like, Michael B. Jordan saw it. And, like, you know, this is some real, like, please like my sport shit, but, like, also, like, you know, I live in Southern California. Please like my sport. Yeah. I love this stupid sport. It's the best. So, like, to see, you know, that kind of stuff just get that kind of burn, like, it's huge, you know what I mean? And, like, we'll get into the good for the game, grow the game conversation and all that kind of stuff. But, like, man, it's just, it's very cool to see to just see, like, a whole social media cycle about two guys on the Ducks. Like, it's just cool and it's fun. Yeah. It's because, you know,
I haven't had it in a while or really ever.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, if you know, like,
Paul and Solani days, and that's it. Like, and even then, you didn't have the social media to really drive it, right?
Right. Well, the other thing too is just the dynamism and the ingenuity, right? Because, like, you know, we've had a couple of, like, surprise fun goals where it's like the dangling, like, Edom through Winnipeg,
Bobby Ryan against Nashville.
Mm-hmm. I mean, hell, even Bobby Ryan against the Kings when he made Pat Sajak cry. You know, you've had those kind of highlights, but it's never been to the degree where everybody kind of collectively looks at you like, wait, your guy can do that? Yeah. And you're just like, I guess. I didn't know he could do that, but apparently he can. You know, and like, I don't know, man. It's very hard, I think, to feel jaded about something that cool. That goal was just a ton of fun to see.
Have we ever seen a kid 50 games into his NHL career pull that off, like, or try as many things as Zegras had? Like, I think there was somebody on Twitter, I can't remember who it was, but they tweeted out, like, a highlight reel from this season from Zegras. It was like 3 or 4 minutes long of different plays that he's tried and then capped off with this goal. And I put out a tweet and I was like, this is like a full career highlight reel for some guys of things that they've pulled off. And this is 25 games for Trevor Zegras this year. And not to mention some of the things he tried to pull off last year. And we talked about it a few shows ago, probably a couple weeks ago now, that he's eventually going to pull something like this off, whether it's the Michigan or between the legs goal or something. Like, he was just trying it on a nightly basis, trying to get something to happen. And, I mean, this was not something I ever thought I would see. It's been tried once by Datsyuk, and he tried to bat it out of the air himself after he flipped it over the net. Other than that, we've had guys, I don't know if they've flipped the puck over the same way, but try and, like, bank it off a goalie's back in similar fashion. But to, you know, alley-oop it, Michigan up onto your stick, alley-oop it over the net, and then for Sonny Milano to hit that out of midair is just as impressive as the pass. And Zegras' reaction to the goal is everything, too. I love it. Like, he's got the confidence to try to pull these off, and was just as surprised as anybody in the building that it actually worked, and that he was actually able to do it. Like, and what it does now too is now that he's introduced this move to his arsenal, he's going to score the Michigan at some point, because now goaltenders have no idea what he's going to do when he picks that puck up on his stick, whether he's going to wrap it around in the top corner, flip it over the top, or do something else with it. Like, it, he's on notice. He's on watch now when he's behind the net, that there's going to be two guys hacking their sticks at him every time he gets the puck behind the net. All he needs is a little space. And it's like every time we see him, like on that play, he's got nobody beside him. He's got one defender kind of at the corner of the net. You're like, you know he's going to do it. Like, you know he's going to try it or do something, because he's got enough space to get it done.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, like, you just – he just has a gravity to him that is just remarkably special. Like, you know, there are players that, like, when you're watching as a fan, you can't take your eyes off of, but they're not always players that, like – bend the structure of the entire other team, kind of not necessarily to their will, but to their presence, right? Like, you have, you know what I mean? It's the Ovechkin on the one-timer thing. Yeah. It's just like your whole thing is either have to all agree that we're going to shift over and surround him, and it's going to be 4-on-0, and we're going to pray that the goalie makes a save, or we're going to ignore it and try to suppress the shot from ever getting there. Both decisions are based around the fact that on that dot, there's Alex Ovechkin who will shoot the puck through you. You know, and to have that kind of creativity, you know, from a playmaking perspective, I think is just so special, because, you know, we've talked about the kind of similarities in his game with Getzlaf's game as far as just being passes and looking for things that other guys aren't looking for. But, like, you know, Getzy doesn't, I guess the best way to say it is Getzy doesn't think vertically, right? Like, apparently Trevor does.
Yeah. Getzlaf is just a very, very good passer, but he's not flashy about it, right? Like, as flashy as Getzy gets is a, like, backhand sauce pass like that. that's pretty much it. But with Zegras, it's like Patrick Kane's creativity with passing, the spinorama passes and everything, and then, like, an added level on top of that where, like, I just don't think we've really seen anybody come into the league that not only has the confidence to try these, but the skill to pull it off at the same time. Like, I just don't think we've seen somebody come in this quick and just do as much things as Trevor Zegras has tried to do, which is exciting for Ducks fans, right? Like, we're used to seeing, like, you know, a certain style of hockey for the last 5-6 years of a heavy physical team that bullies everybody.
Longer and beats than that,
yeah,
man.
Like, it's been a while. And to have this new wave that kind of is where the game is going, and have guys like Zegras and Milano coming to the team, and Troy Terry has been putting people on notice with his puck skills this year. Like, just a nice change, a lot of fun to watch, and great for the league to have a kid like Trevor Zegras in there, and obviously a lot of fun for us that he gets to be doing it on our team and not against us. I feel for Sabres fans a little bit that game, like, they've already had it, like, really bad this year and over the last few years, and of course it happens against them, right? Like, it's just a tough go.
Yeah. You know, and you feel for Pekka Luukkonen in there, because, like, he pretty much played it perfectly. Like, I don't know what else he was supposed to do. It's just Milano just tucked it into that tiny little bit of space over his shoulder, and you're just like,
perfectly executed, yeah, play. Like, there's nothing
okay,
you can do.
Yeah, fine, whatever. I don't, yeah, you know,
the,
I'm not going to stop.
Flip,
like,
the flip was
do?
Perfect over the net, like, perfectly weighted, the height, everything. Comes, it, you know, the deception and everything, and then Milano's bat out of midair is just perfect where he was able to place it. I don't know if he fully meant it. It was just get as much as you can on it and hope that it goes past him. But Brett brings up a conspiracy here that maybe it was a high stick, but the league just brushed it aside because they knew how much that goal would mean to see that game,
you know,
to see that happen. I wouldn't be surprised. I'd be on board with that.
I wouldn't either. I would be down with it. I love it. The other thing, and then this will kind of get us into the next obvious thing to talk about, but I assume most people saw it just because, you know, if you're paying attention, you're a Ducks fan, but they did the Doctor Strange edit.
Yeah. Bleacher Report did
on
that.
Bleacher Report with the pass. And I mean, we've been in this Marvel thing for, like, I don't know, 10 years, something like that, 15 years, whatever it's been. It feels like it's been forever. And, like, it's very hard to not kind of roll your eyes, for me at least, at, like, all those kind of mashups, because they always feel forced. Yeah. That was so fucking cool, man. Awesome. Whoever thought of that, like, they just did such a great job. And then, like, manipulating the footage so, like, it comes from in front. You know what I mean? Like, it was awesome. And I think that kind of tie-in is the kind of thing that gets people's attention on Twitter, right? Which is kind of a whole thing that the NHL...
That's what they're trying to do.
Whether they're trying to or not, they need to do, which is try to get as many casuals into the tent as possible and hope that some of them stick around. And
I think they are.
A play like that.
Like, I have to think they are, because the different avenues of ways you can consume the game and get commentary on the game from different types of commentary, this year specifically, NHL on TNT appeals to a certain audience, ESPN Plus appeals to a certain audience, and then you've got the traditional broadcast that you can watch that are kind of the old school broadcast, right? So they've now got different ways you can consume the game. Bleacher Report has done a great job this year with their, I think it's their Open Ice. I haven't really looked into it, but that's where that clip you're talking about came from. That's been great. They've been great this year. There just seems to be a lot more content for the NHL this year. They've taken the NBA type approach where they're doing a lot more of these things and bringing different voices and opinions into the game, which is what they need to do. And, you know, as much as I hate the towards comments, you need them. Right, you need the discourse for a play like this and to continue to talk about it. You're never going to have one side of it. Majority of people like it. The clip has 50 million views. We all love it. There's always going to be some people on the other side of it, and you need it for the conversation, the debate, because all it's going to do is bring more light to the game, more light to the play. John Tortorella is going to get shit, which everybody loves to give him shit about stuff. So you need those comments, right, to keep it going.
Yeah, drive the interest, drive the narrative, all that kind of stuff. I assume that you have quite a bit to say. So I will just say that I'm going to flip the conversation over the net, and you can hit it home, and we'll see. I'm just going to let you rant for a minute, and then I'll
Should
talk.
We play the two-minute clip so everybody who hasn't heard it can hear it? I've got it queued up here.
Play it. Let's do it.
Right, hold on.
It's a clip show now, baby. Yeah.
When I saw that goal, Mr. John Tortorella, was, what does Coach Torts think of this goal? I really want to hear your opinion here.
Yeah, and it's tremendously skilled. For Sonny Milano even to yell Michigan in the middle of a play in a game is skill. That's a skilled play. My position, though, is it good for the game? Like, I hear Ray saying all the kids are doing it now, okay, in practice and stuff like that. I'm not so sure. And again, I'm not trying to be a fool here, but I'm just not so sure it's great for the game. If you did that back in the 2000, late 90s, 2000, you get your head taken off. It's cool, you know, it's cool to watch and all that, but I'm not so sure it's good for the game. And I stand by that.
50 million views is a lot. To see it online.
Well, it's not even, it's the goal is amazing, right? I mean, you said the fact that they've actually said that, like, I have, you know, kids in that coach in high school that they want me to drop plays off the faceoff so they can try to score a goal like that, just to score the Michigan goal. But for him to be a rookie, to actually try that in a game as a rookie.
Yeah.
You would never even thought about doing something like
that. What would you have said if they were on your team and they did that?
Yeah, I'd have a talk with the people. I would after the game. And again, I'm not trying to be difficult about it. It's fun to watch. It's really cool. But I think our game has gone so far away from what the game should be, a hard game, an honest game, and it's almost gotten too. It's too showman. I know you need to have it. You need to sell the game. But I'm just, you know, I'm from the ilk of it's still a hard game to play, and at a good, honest hockey game needs to be played. I think some of this stuff here, we get carried away.
But that's good for the game, though. The fact that it's been viewed that many times?
Yeah.
The fan that we're trying to attract
yes.
is the casual
but
fan.
But I think you're losing fans, too. I think you're losing other fans also when you're attracting others towards this stuff.
What would you have done if you were... goaltender.
It would have been bad. Yeah, it would have been bad.
It would have been bad.
I would have pulled myself, I think.
All right. There's a lot to unpack there. my favorite thing is, like, you can tell he's holding back. If you got him off camera in a room and he didn't care and no filter, he wouldn't have said it's cool or whatever. He would have went in on it. There's absolutely no way. He's holding back a little bit there for TV. There's just so many things wrong with this for me. Like, listen, you can have your opinion. I get it. I understand it. The comment that bothers me is saying it's bad for the game. It's bad for the way he wants the game to be in his mind. It's not bad for the game. It's actually great for the game. Like, they're just saying you get 50 million views on a clip. That's a lot of casual either hockey fans or people who aren't hockey fans who might now become hockey fans because of that play. That's great for the game. The play itself isn't bad for the game. It's bad for the way he wants the game. And you can hear it in his comments where he says, I don't like where our game is going, where he's saying, okay, this is, you know, now classified it as the old boys club, where it's our game. Our game is dying because these kids are coming in and having fun and nobody's getting their head taken off and, you know, headshots at center ice and nobody went and tried to level Zegras after that play and his version of the game is dying. Listen, I understand the sentiment. I get it. I'll probably be the same way in 20 years when the game changes from the way I'm used to watching it. And like, I know if Pat was here, he'd be probably, no, I don't say arguing the same side as Torts, but based on our previous arguments, I'm sure he would be a little bit more in favor of what Torts is saying to some extent. But when Pat gets here, you can back that comment up a little bit. But like, for me, like the thing that bothers me the most, like I said, is saying it's bad for the game, because that's just a ridiculous comment. Like, he mentions that, he says, I don't want to be a fool. Well, you're a fool by saying it's bad for the game right there. You've already screwed yourself by saying that. If he wants a more physical brand of hockey, that's fine. It's the same as, I like the skilled brand of hockey. I love these plays. That's my opinion. His opinion, he wants a more physical brand of hockey. That's fine. But when you're saying it's bad for the game and it's our game and our game is dying because that's where I have a problem. Because it's not your game. It's everybody's game. And clearly, the majority of people like this because there's a ton of views and a ton of positive reception for this. What are your takes on this? Because I know we chatted about this last night and you wanted to save it for today, so I'm sure you've got something to say. And don't play devil's advocate. I want to hear what your honest opinion is on this.
I don't know, man. Like, my thing with this is, like, what he said and what Tockett said, like, it doesn't really surprise me. I think I understand where Torts is coming from. I think there is a degree to which people project, right? And I think a lot of people, like, when he says our game, I don't think he means everyone over 35. I think he means the hockey community. He considers himself to be a part of the hockey community. He is won a Stanley Cup. He has coached in this league. He's coached the Olympics. Like, he has been, for better or worse, a steward of this game for 20 years, 25 years, if not longer, because he didn't just walk into the NHL as a coach off the street. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. He didn't
get paid his dues. Tampa Bay job after Starbucks. He's been, like, he was a good coach in this league, and he's an important part for what he did. So.
Yeah, so, like, I think his our thing is very much just, like, who are we? Who do we want to be kind of thing? And I think when I talk about, like, projection, like, I think there's a degree to which people naturally project their sense of morality, their personal philosophy, or their kind of worldview onto this game. And, like, just – when he says make it a good, honest game, like, what he's saying is, he's like, just beat the fucking guy in front of you, right? Like, it's kind of like that old school football, like, run the ball thing. It's like, no, we're going to put five guys on the line, and we're just going to push you out of the way, and we're going to give it to the dude back here, and he is going to run. And we're going to do that all game, and it's going to hurt. And you're going to have to deal with that. And, like, you know, he's a militaristic type guy. You know, we know he has a lot of things with veterans and stuff like that in the past. And, you know, just by his general personality, like, you get that he's just kind of a real structured, regimented guy. We've seen the way he plays, like, you know, his teams play with structure and shutting things down. And, like, I just think what this is for him is, it's him kind of working through a generational thing where, you know, he just thinks, like, if you put a guy on your back, like you know what I like, I just don't like.
This is not more on the Sabres though. Like, is this if why is he not more mad at the Sabres? They let it happen, and then they did nothing about it.
Yeah, I think that's fair, but I also think, to his and Tocchet's credit, nobody has raised that point, and I didn't think of that till right now. Nobody has made the comment of, like, how did the Sabres let this happen? Which, you know, is actually kind of interesting, because you could argue that the more progressive approach is like, how the fuck did the Sabres let this happen? He had, you know, the dude baked a cake back there.
You see how much space he had? How much time he had? You know this guy has tried the Michigan. At least be, so, you know, aware of that. Send two guys behind the net and block this to the front of the ice. The best thing he can do at that point is send it back to the point. But,
I just... Like I said, I'm not trying to play devil's advocate. I just think that there is a part of this that I think we can lose sight of, because this is what we want to see. You know, I had a really long conversation with a couple of people after Tocchet made his comment the next night about, you know, where Biz asked him, like, what would you have done, Tocchet, if you were out there? And he was like, oh, as a player or a coach? And they were like, both. He's like, I, you know, he would have had to play. He's like, it's incredible. Don't get me wrong. What he did is so dope. He would have had to pay the next time he was out there. And that comment didn't bother me. And I had a really long conversation with some people. Nick Morgan writes about Nashville. Robin Pennington's been on this before. Guy JJ, who writes about the Detroit, just some really smart people that I really respect. And one of the things that we kind of worked through, and I really appreciated, was them thinking about Tocchet's, and it's essentially corporal punishment, right? And because the thing that I said is, I was like, yo, like, if you pull some slick shit like this, like, you got to look over your shoulder. Like, that's just in my brain. Like, I'm not saying it's good, bad, or indifferent. If you're Trevor Zegras and you do that to a bunch of grown men, like, he embarrassed them. Let's be very clear about that.
And he's a rookie.
He made them look like fucking fools. Yeah. It's awesome. It's so dope. It's the closest we're going to get to an NHL poster, right? But I also understand that these are men with pride. They're on national television. This was a nationally televised game. They know that they just got put on a poster, and I'm not going to let you do that.
They've been viewed 50 million times letting it happen, right?
Yeah, so. You know, and so, like, the understand, like, the idea of, like, yo, like, all right, this kid's gonna get fucked up, and let's see if he tries that shit again. Like, I understand the mentality behind that, right? Because defense, a tool in defense is physicality, right? That's why you cross check guys in the front of the net. That's why you hit guys into the boards when they're taking the puck deep. You want to create that doubt, that little split extra second in their mind where they're like, can I do this? The problem with that is, if it's after the fact, it becomes a retaliation as opposed to preventative. And, you know, like I said, like, this is something I really had to work through, because I really didn't have a problem with Tocchet said. And then I talked to some people, and they kind of helped me work through this. And I really understand the idea as far as what...
Shane says, if your pride is hurt, play better defense.
Yeah, no, you know what I mean? And somebody kind of made the point, I think it was Nick Morgan, right? Like I said, writes about the Predators, and he made the comment to me that he's like, so are you for beating the batter? And I'm like, well, no. Like, if you give up a home run, you give up a home run. Don't throw a bad pitch. You know, and he was like, well, this is the same. And then I was like, well, I don't think it is, because it's like, also, don't do it again. Like, you know what I mean? No one's saying don't hit a home run. They're just saying don't pip your home run. But, like, it is kind of the same thing. And so, like, I just, you know, I don't know. I have had a very interesting evolution with this conversation over the last 2.5 days. And I think there is room to talk about what it is that Rick Tocchet said and what it is that Tortorella is saying. And instead of just being fucking annoyed and going for dunks on Twitter and stuff, you know, like, honest to God, dude, and I can't believe this is where we are, the only good take I've seen about what Tort said was Felix. And he was just like, the only thing I'll say about this is, damn, Dallas Eakins should get more credit for going out of his way to say, I am not going to step on this kid's creativity. That's the only takeaway from this that I really think is worth anything. Yeah.
It's not surprising from Torts. Like, this is...
That's the thing. Everybody knows who he is. Everybody knows how he feels. And, like, I'm not saying people aren't entitled to their reactions, and I understand the way in which this is gatekeepy, and it's You know, like I said, there are moral and cultural and philosophical things here at play that are kind of against, you know, some of what a lot of us want this game to become. But I don't think he's a bad person because he just wants the game to be played a certain way. He's just kind of boring and he's just kind of tough. And you know what I mean? And so, like,
that's what he's had success with. That's what he's done his entire career, is he's coached teams a certain way. And, like, listen, I've sat back on the talking thing and I've said I'm fine with it, in the sense that, like, yeah, I don't want to, you're not going to go out there and headshot the kid after because he did that. And that's the vibe I got from Rick talking, but in the sense of, like, go out there and don't let it happen again, or, like, go out there and send a message in the sense, like, play him a little bit more physical, be a bit more rough on him, play him a bit closer, because he just embarrassed you. It's like if, you know, somebody walks up to the plate, hits a home run, bat flips, he's going to probably get hit with a pitch some point later in the game. Or you know, he's going to get slid hard. Or if you nutmeg somebody in soccer, like, there's hard tackles coming in. Like, you got embarrassed. So I can understand his point in the sense that, all right, like, next play, he's out there, we're going to hit him hard, or we're going to play him tough, or we're going to give him a couple whacks on the wrist or at the ankles or whatever, where the pads aren't really covering any part of his body there. So I can understand that in the sense, but from Tocchet, like, just knowing his coach and what he was as a player, like, I get a vibe from him that was like, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to hit him in a vulnerable position, take his head off. Like, that was just the vibe I got from it. But the premise of the idea is, I get it. Like, the Sabres should have been embarrassed. They should then play better defense next time he's behind the net. And they can go out there and say, listen, you're not going to do this to us again. We're going to play you a bit tougher. And they didn't really do that because Zegras still kind of had his way with them for the rest of the game. But, like, Torts comments bother me a bit more than Toggins, because I've sat back on it. And I'm more so just upset with, not even upset, but just annoyed with the, you know, I know what Tocchet meant when he meant get out there and literally murder this kid and show him you can't do this again.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You're on mute.
I don't even know how that happened. Whatever. Oh, it must have been when I was trying to make fun of Brett in the chat. And I hit the wrong button because I'm stupid. Yeah, like, you know, part of that conversation that I was having with those people is, like, one of the things I said is, I was like, yo, like, if the next time he's against the boards and you fucking nail him, like, that doesn't bother me. Like, if he goes to the net hard and somebody just dumps his ass, I don't have a problem with that. That's going to happen anyways. It's you know, it's the chop on the wrists. It's the head hunting. It's, you know, knee stuff. Like, intent to injure. And that's kind of where you can get into the dicey stuff. And I think that's where the line isn't clear, right? Because, you know, you're getting into gradations of what is and isn't an acceptable physical response to being embarrassed as an adult. And, like, one of the things for me is, like, what happens in sports and what happens in the real world, they're not the same. You know what I mean? Like, and for good and for bad, I think I do a very good job of separating them. And the question kind of becomes, like, what does this say about who we are? What does it say about that? Like, I don't want to moralize this as that, but I just think there is something to be said of, there is what Tocchet said and the way that it could be taken too far, right? Is bad. It is bad for the game. That is actively bad for the game. If you are hurting skill players that can make the game more engaging and more fun and more exciting for people, that's a problem. If you're just going to go, you know, dump a guy into the fucking crease because he made you look stupid and you're going to lay on him and whisper in his ear, bro, I rooted for Corey Perry. I don't give a shit. Like, I'm not, you know,
I've seen a lot of that over the years.
Yeah. Like, I, you know, Corey Perry's never found blue paint he could stand on. It's impossible. Like, if it's blue paint, he just falls. He has an allergic reaction and he falls. You know, so I don't know. I think if it wasn't Torts, there might be a little bit more room for a conversation. But then again, Tockett and him kind of said similar ideas, yeah, and everybody got mad at both of them. So I don't know. It's one of those things, I guess, as far as like you said, like, to me, the idea that it's bad for the game is insane. I get what he means. You know, he doesn't want it to turn into an and one mixtape, but like, I would very much love for it to turn into an and one mixtape. Like, I would like
it's
to see
stuff. It's just what the generation now wants, because we've grown up on highlight reels and watching highlight reels, yeah, and now, like, that's what it's about, right? Like, that, and every sport is going through the same thing. A change in personality. The sports that didn't have personality, baseball, hockey, soccer to some extent, you've now added these creative flair to all these games, and they're trending in that direction. The NHL is just a step behind a few other leagues in getting there, but that's just the way sports are going. That's just, if you don't like it, I mean, that's fine. That's your opinion, but that's where it's going. They're always going to cater to the next upcoming generation, because that's your next wave of fans. They're not going to go back to the physical style of hockey that Torts likes unless that's what they want. And clearly it's not when you look at the reaction to that goal. That's fine if Torts wants it. I don't mind. The one thing I want to get into, because I don't want to spend an hour on this, if that doesn't, because Torts said he's going to have a talk with, if they were on his team, he'd have a talk with them. My problem with that, if that doesn't go in the back of the net, is that a bad play? I don't think it is, because that's a pass to the slot, dangerous area. Do you think it's a bad play if it doesn't go into the back of the net?
No. There's no way to say no. There's no way to say it's a bad play. I think, you know, like you said, like, it's a pass right in front of the net. Like, that's where you want it to go. I mean, look, we saw this in some of the comments, right? Like, some of the people that Torts is talking about, like, there are more than a few people who are like, why didn't you just fucking pass it to Milano on the floor? And, like, my comment there would be like, well, because it's a lot easier for goalies to stop things that are on the ice than it is for them to stop things they can't see.
And there's three sabers in the crease.
Yeah, you know, but, like, you already saw that kind of reaction. And so, you know, I don't think it's a bad play. I think it's just, it's a different, again, like, it stretches the ice. It makes verticality a part of the game in a way that it really hasn't been before, other than tip shots, you know, other than like putting something up high and hoping to get like a low tip. There's really not been that aspect of verticality. I mean, the closest thing is like a chip and, you know, like a chip and chase, where you kind of saw Henrik embarrass Vatanen right after the trade, where he pops it over top. But that's, you know, that's still very creative in a way that, you know, it's the vertical version of chipping off the boards and going around. But like, it's still, the downside to there is the puck is just going to go deep. And, you know, so it's just a little extra. But this is just, no, I'm going to put this right here in front of the goalie, and he's never going to know. And it's just incredible, you know?
And the thing with Zegras too is it's not like he's doing this in the neutral zone and losing the puck. Like, he's doing all this in the offensive zone to create chances, and they're good chances that he's creating. It's not like he's trying to put it between his legs, make a pass in the neutral zone, it's a turnover and it goes the other way. Like, he's doing these in the right position. Like, he's not making bad decisions, even if they don't work out. Like, he probably could have gotten that between the legs pass to through Doughty to Milano. Milano had it. Could have put that in the back of the net. He was one step behind the play, right? Like, he's very close to pulling a lot of these off. And I mean, for Zegras, this is going to be the rest of his career. He's just going to continue to do these things, and that's what we want from him, is to continue to pull plays off like this. We gotta move on. We have to, because we've got like several other things to talk about today. I was gonna talk about Milano a little bit, because his numbers are amazing. Like, the points, again, 8 goals, 12 assists, 20 points in 23 games. But my favorite charts, he looks amazing on. He looks great on the RIPM chart for evolving hockey. He's contributing on all ends of the ice, great on the power play, play driving, puck distributor. not a detriment defensively, contributing on you know, his finishing has been great this year. He's been a really efficient passer of the puck. Like, it's just, it's not all on Zegras. Like, we talk about McDavid and whoever plays with McDavid, and before that, whoever plays with Crosby, they're not that great, but they're playing with these guys, so they're, you know, they're good because they're playing with these guys. And I feel like Milano, definitely not from Ducks fans, but the belief is, oh, well, he's playing with Zegras, so obviously he's going to be playing well. But I think he deserves some credit because he has been very good on his own this year. Like, he's been making things happen himself.
Yeah, no, I think what you're seeing is someone who needs a buddy, right? He just, again, especially under Torts, he wasn't going to find somebody who was going to be either able or willing to just do some of the aggressive, just high skill stuff, right? Some of that more creative stuff. He comes to Anaheim, you know, he has a couple of good games after the trade deadline. He misses a year with injury and he comes into this, and now he's playing with Zegras, and Zegras is, you know, he's got enough creativity to fill buckets. So, you know, him and Milano apparently just kind of see the game similarly. They just kind of found some chemistry. I mean, you know, I saw they were talking about it after the goal with Zegras, and just like, you know, you guys found some chemistry. He's like, yeah, we have. Like, he didn't really have, you know, anything like, oh, yeah, we stay up late every night, you know, painting each other's nails or anything like that. It was just like, he was just like, yeah, we just seem to kind of get it. And they've played really well together, and they just seem to be having fun. You know, and I'm just so happy for Milano, because there's so many times, and I just look down on the notes, we'll get to this a little bit later, where a player just goes stale somewhere and they're not able to recover. You know, whether it's because the expectations are too much, the situation is too difficult, or, you know, they just can't kind of get past whatever is holding them back. Like, we just see players just kind of fizzle out, and these are skilled guys. You know what I mean? Like, to get drafted, you have to be good. So I just think it's really nice, and it's a really wonderful story to see someone like Sonny Milano, who was plagued by inconsistencies, you know, kind of early on in his career, find someone that he's got this kind of chemistry with and just be able to go out and have fun and just look a lot more like the guy they thought they were drafting.
Yeah.
You know, in Columbus. So it's just awesome for him. You know, his underlying numbers defensively are actually really solid, which is nice. You know, and you watch him, and he's just fucking all effort, man. Like, he just works. And then he's got that skill and that kind of tenacity to go with it. And it's wonderful to see. He's been a real joy. Like, as much as Troy Terry has taken the quantum leap and Trevor Zegras has been a revelation, like, Sonny Milano's just been a wonderful thing to watch this year. And if he wasn't on a line with Zegras but was still performing, I just don't know that he would get this kind of love. So I'm kind of, well, I don't know. It's kind tough. Of a catch 22.
Well, yeah. He'd either be playing with Getzlaff, and then it would be always playing with Getzlaff, or he'd be playing with Zegras, and it's always playing with Zegras, right? So it's tough for him. But he deserves the credit for what he's done. Like, that line is so tough to play against, not because they're so skilled offensively. They do not lay off the puck. Like, Zegras and Milano are probably two of the best puck pressurers on the team. Like, they're relentless when, like, you're trying to break out of your own end. They're both hounding pucks. If they have a little bit of space, they'll get in there. They'll get inside. They'll whack at the stick. Zegras has probably been the Ducks' best player in that, in intercepting pucks in the opposition zone and hounding defenders and trying to get the puck back. Milano's been just as good at that. And, like, you know, the numbers show it, too. Like, and you just have to watch the game to watch how these guys play. Like, I would hate to play against them right now because of how relentless they are on their pursuit of the puck, and then just the chemistry and the skill they have going the other way. Like, you just don't know what they're going to do. You feel like you could be in good position, and then all of a sudden Milano sneaks behind you and Zegras just sends a ridiculous pass threaded through your feet right to him. So it's a lot of fun for us. I would hate to play against them right now. There really hasn't been a night off for them where they haven't looked great. They've been great or put up points in pretty much every game that they've been together. And Raquel's a part of that too as well. We can't forget him. He's been an important part of that line as well. But there's some clear chemistry with Zegras and Milano, and I just love watching these two guys, you know, take interviews, and, like, these are the two stars of the Ducks right now, and they're, like, just two beach guys, right? Like, they look like they hang out on the beach all day. It's like, I love it I mean, obviously, I'm not from Southern California, but if you had to think of, you know, two guys who would epitomize Southern California hockey right now, it'd be looking at Sonny Milano and Trevor Zegras. So it's great. I love it. Quick note I want to mention, Mason McTavish was suspended 3 games for a check to the head. We talked about this on Ducks Morning Brew. Apparently won't affect his World Junior Championship eligibility, so just to clear that up for anybody who wasn't sure, he'll be able to go and play for Canada. He's just going through some testing right now, and then he'll join the camp. He looks more than likely to be a lock for that tournament, be the first-line center for Canada, and he'll serve his suspension when he comes back for whatever team he's playing for, because I doubt it's going to be Peterborough. He's likely going to be traded. Zellweger is also at Canada selection camp, and Pastuov and Ian Moore head to, I think it's Plymouth, for Team USA's preliminary camp tomorrow. They head out there, and I think that's a 4-day camp. It goes until the 15th, and then we're almost World Junior season, so it's gonna be a lot of fun. No Zegras this year, so nothing like it was last year, but McTavish and Pastuov will be a lot of fun to watch, and Moore and Zellweger as well will be fun to watch from the back end. Also, Ryan Getzlaf back at practice. He should be good to go tonight, which will be a relief for the Ducks. Not as much pressure on Zegras, Milano, and Raquel. Terry gets his partner back, and he's not trying to carry a line with Sam Steele and, who was it? It wasn't Derek Grant. Who was playing on that line? Vinny Lettieri. So some relief there for Troy Terry. He was still playing well. I got to give him credit. He was playing well without Getzlaf, but there'll be a nice, hopefully he plays tonight. I don't think it's been confirmed. He's practicing, so it looks good. And then Henrik is still on the IR. But it gets into a few players I do want to talk about here, and that's Sam Steele and Isaac Lindstrom. Sam Steele, in Getzlaf's absence, was placed on the top line and didn't look great. It was the Troy Terry show, and I'm going to drag these two guys along with me and hope that we can get something done. Vinny Lettieri was actually pretty good. I'll give him some credit. He's got a great shot, and that's what they put him out there for. I just don't know what's next for Sam Steele at this point. I chatted about this, I think, on Wednesday's Ducks Morning Brew, but he has not been good this year. The underlying numbers don't look great. He doesn't look great when you watch him on the ice. I don't know what... I mean, is this? I guess this is what he is at this point, right? Like, he's 23, turning 24. You know, same with Milano. Maybe a new scenery or, you know, a new opportunity, and can refresh his career. I don't think it's over for him yet. But I think we're getting to the point where maybe it's over for him in Anaheim, because you've got Zegras, Getzlaf, and Lindstrom right now, who are clearly the Ducks' best three centers, and all are playing well. You've got McTavish on the way, who will eventually replace Ryan Getzlaf. I don't see where Sam Steele plays down the middle. And then on the wing, like, I just, with Jones and Comtois and Milano now and Terry and Perreault on the way and Tracy, like, I just feel like the time is running out for Sam Steele. He's a pending RFA. I feel for the kid. I loved him as a prospect. I still love him as a player. I just don't see the fit for him anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny, you know, I always bitch about 150 games. He's literally played 150 games, and he's got 22 goals and 28 points in 58 games. And, you know, that's fine. He just hasn't been able to find his footing for whatever reason. And you know, you would have hoped getting more time under Aikens, who he had some success with in San Diego, would have been better, but it just hasn't been the case. I think he's looked better on the wing. I think the game slows down a little bit more for him there when he has less responsibility. But, you know, like you said, the pipeline at this point at least appears to be full on the wings. And it looks like they've got a couple of centers that they can take going forward for a while, not to mention, you know, there's going to be more drafts and more surprises and free agents and all that shit. It just feels like he needs to move on. And it's a bummer because he seems like a great kid, man, but it just hasn't worked for him in Anaheim, and maybe he can go somewhere and get a fresh start. But, you know, let me ask you it this way. Would you rather flip him in a my bum for your bum hockey deal, or would you rather use him as an extra, you know, cherry on top, not cherry on top, but, you know, like an extra piece in a trade?
You know, I'm honestly fine with both. It just would depend on the certain situation. Like I think if you could throw him, if you could throw him in a deal, him plus to get Jake DeBrusk in the same, you know, players ask for a trade is struggling, right. then that's fine. But also if he's a throw-in piece in that deal as well, because it's not going to just be him who gets it done. You know, not every trade like that is a Devin Shore for Sonny Milano, right? Like, you're not always going to get that. You're going to get some Pettersons for Sprongs in there where it just doesn't work out for the Ducks. But I think either way, like, no matter what deal you do, you're taking some risk. But at this point, you kind of have to. Like, I just don't see it working out for him here. I think there are teams who would be interested in a former first-round pick that had the pedigree that he did coming out of junior that would be willing to give up either one of their own struggling players or take him as an additional piece in the larger deal, and you'll get something extra in return for that, or it might be, you know, the last piece that gets you over the line for a certain deal. So I think we're, you know, either way, I'm fine with it. I just don't think it's valued too high right now.
I don't know how to say this, because obviously the answer is probably yes, but like I would be interested in like Kravtsov, right? Yeah. I wonder if, you know, my guy for your guy swap, you know, and Kravtsov's more of a recent pick, so maybe, you know, you got to throw like a third pick in there with him in his pocket. But I you know, those are the kind of deals I think could be interesting. And I also think that they might be able – the other question, right, is if you look at some of these teams that are spending – you know, like I wonder about like Chicago, right? Like, would Chicago give up like a third-round pick for Sam Steele because they just have nothing else right now going for them and they need to bring in young talent?
They're also
like,
shopping again, Dylan Strome, so you could do a Steele plus for Dylan Strome or something as well.
Yeah, 100%. But I just, like, you know, I wonder if you could just get a nice pick and not add more to the pipeline and just kind of have it, you know? I don't know, but it's interesting. And I, you know, we've talked about it, and I mentioned it on Twitter the other day. Him and Max Comtois, man, like, I'm not 100% sure they're on this team the next time the team is, like, a legitimate contender.
It's tough.
You know, which... if it's this year, then I'm probably wrong. But, like, you know, I think those two guys are going to be looking at a hard roster to crack.
Yeah, come twice to get got a bit more rope, I think, obviously, with the injury and everything in last year. But, yeah.
I just think with the way Milano's played, because, I mean, look, I think the reality is a lot of us expected Comtois to be, at worst, based on his play early on so far, a second-line winger.
Expected him to be doing what Milano's doing right now. 20 points in 23 games, playing with Zegras, you know, playing well.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't, you know, I you can't get rid of Milano at this point.
Can't take him off that line either.
You still got Jones, and then you've also still got Rico, and you've got Silverberg, and then you've got Perot and Pastia and Tracy, and, like, there's just a plethora of players right now for a limited amount of spots. And as much as that's a good thing, it's also leading to some hard decisions. And I think it's very easy to envision a world in which Comtois makes more sense, you know, to bring something back.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was a player we kind of threw in when all the Girard rumors were going around because he's young, he's cost controlled, he has the goal scoring upside. You know, he was the captain for the World Junior team, so he's got that kind of pedigree. Like, yeah,
throwing in Eichel trade discussions is a big piece too. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a very interesting thing for me, and I don't think this is where I expected this team to be. Coming into this year, that Comtois was a guy that I was like, he's not gonna, you know. But it's just crazy, man. This is what it might be. So I don't know.
All right, you got to make a decision here. We've only got time for one. So we've got Claude Giroux to Anaheim. Bleacher Report listed him as a possible destination for the Ducks. Or our conversation we alluded to at the beginning of the show of Jeff Solomon, will he overreact to the Ducks' success?
Well, let's do that because we're going to do the show tomorrow morning too. Right. And we'll get into the Giroux thing.
Yeah. Well, for anybody who doesn't know, we're doing a Patreon show tomorrow. I guess nobody knows because only you and me have discussed it. But we're recording a Patreon show basically diving into some wild trades. Steven and I both got two divisions each. We can only make trades within those divisions. And then we also put two Ducks trades out there. So, yeah, we'll talk about it on that show. If you want to hear us talk about Claude Giroux to Anaheim, then we'll talk about it on the Patreon. So she'll have to join the Patreon for that at patreon.com/forevermighty. But let's get into the Jeff Solomon conversation.
Look at that plug. What a pro.
Yeah, gotta throw it in there. You know what I mean? All right. You put out a great Twitter poll. About will Jeff Solomon overreact to the Ducks' success, right? That was kind of the gist of it. And what will management do because it's been such a pleasant surprise this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think it kind of boils down to two questions, which is one, are they for real? And if not, will they overreact? You know, because it was kind of like, yes, they'll overreact. No, they won't overreact. Or no, they're not overreacting, but they are going to go for it. And I just think it's really interesting. We kind of talked about it a little bit at the beginning. Like, you know, this team has the pieces to go out and be interesting. And the more that this season goes on, the farther away they get from the lottery, right? It feels silly to say because, like, they got Getzlaf at, like, 19 and Perry at whatever. And then, obviously, we saw what happened with Perreault and Pastiop and Zellweger. And we know that there are valuable places to be found. But it also makes me wonder, like, given where they're at, is this a chance where maybe they move their first-round pick this year in a way to try to bring somebody in and maybe try to do, you know, just do that? Like, really try to send a message to the team, you know, that Solomon's got their back, or maybe Solomon is trying to make a play for the job. There's a lot of different things, you know, that I think are going on right now, but I just kind of want to get your thoughts. Like, where do you see this happen? Where do you see this going?
Yeah, I honestly think just based off the comments, I think they're still going to kind of stay the course here. And, you know, I think Raquel gets moved, and I think one of Lindholm or Manson get moved, probably more so Manson. I think the Ducks will probably have a discussion on a contract extension with Hampus Lindholm, and then we'll, you know, he'll be a kind of wait and see type guy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Brett asked this question too on Twitter about Raquel, and, you know, if he continues to play the way he's playing with Milano and Zegras, does he kind of become not expendable at that point because they're such a great trio? I don't want to throw Ricard Raquel under the bus. I think he's been a valuable part of that line. I think if anybody's replaceable on that line, it's Ricard Raquel. I think you could slot somebody in a similar role who could do just as well. Raquel's not been a passenger per se on that line, but he's been the third man. Right, like we talked about that with Henrik, Getzlaf, and Terry. Getzlaf and Terry were the duo, and Henrik was really good, but he was kind of the passenger on that line. And it always kind of seems to be the case, unless you've got like a Marchand, Bergeron, Pastrnak type line. Like there, you know, there's not too many times where all three of them are kind of clicking at the same level. I think Ricard Raquel can be replaced, and you can put somebody else there. Whether it's Maxime Comtois coming back from injury and you play him there, or you pick up a Jake DeBrusque in the trade for Ricard Raquel and you play him there. I think you know, you can put a shot first winger on that line, and they'll do the job and they'll get it done. And Zegras and Milano will continue to do what they're doing, but there's a clear duo on that line. So I think, you know, you should still move Ricard Raquel. I don't think you should fall into it's a contract season. He's back. Like, no, it's a contract season. He's playing really well on a great line right now. He's putting up good numbers. This is when you move him. This is not when you say, oh, let's re-sign him, because we did it with Henrik. We did it with Silverberg. I don't think we can fall in that trap and do it again with Ricard Raquel. And, you know, he, even if you sign him, I'm not saying he's just going to fall off the earth. Like, he'll still be a good player, and he could work really well on that line. But I think we have a lot of younger players coming up. Perreault could be in this lineup next year and do exactly the same, if not potentially better. Cost controlled. You're not paying him potentially $4.5 to $5.5 million for the next 4 years. You've got some more cap flexibility there where you have to re-sign Zegras and Drysdale in the next 2 years. The Ducks aren't really going to be cap strapped, but also if you re-sign Hampus Lindholm, you start to, these contracts start to hurt you at that point. If you know, Henrik's the next 2 years, Silverberg's I think the next 2 years as well. you add Raquel into the mix, Fowler, obviously, with his contract, you start to get into an area where you might be hurt by that, and you're in, like, a Vancouver Canucks-type situation where you're struggling to re-sign Pettersson and Hughes, right? So I don't want to be in that situation. I imagine the way Zegras is playing, when his contract extension kicks in, it's going to be similar to Jack Hughes, where Jack Hughes got, like, 8x8.
Yeah.
And Drysdale will be probably 5, 6, 7 around there, I would imagine, for a long term. If they can sign him long term, he might take a bridge. But you don't want to just hamper yourself at that point is kind of my thought process with that. Same with Josh Manson. The only one I could argue again is Hampus Lindholm, because I think he's valuable to this team more so than those guys. There's not a lot of depth on the left side of defense going down, or at least immediate coming into this team. Zellweger is probably a couple years away. Thrun the same. And there's no guarantee that they're going to jump in and do the job. And it's just Fowler and Lindholm right now. And I think you can stick with those two and be fine and have Drysdale on the right side and replace Manson with somebody else in the future, or somebody else from San Diego, or in free agency or a trade or whatever. And you can stopgap Manson and Raquel. I don't think you can stopgap Lindholm at this point. So that's why I would arguably keep him around.
Yeah, and, you know, Brett kind of mentioned in the chat that, like, his question is more of, like, a chemistry one. And, like, is Raquel, like, kind of empowering them? And I think the thing I would say to that is, like, if that is the case, then he isn't a passenger, right? And, you know, I just think what you're seeing is that Raquel's skill set perfectly functions on that line, but his skill set is not unique, and it is not exceptional, right? He's a very good offensive player. He is not a great offensive player. So unless he is either willing to take a pay cut, or Trevor Zegras comes and says, like, I need this guy around because me, him, and Milano are making it happen, I don't think you can get yourself in a position where you're committed to him. Because if you do that, then that means you're going to have to use some of those assets as makeways to move Silfverberg, to move Henrik, maybe even to have to move out of Fowler, right? Like, you're just going to, like you said, at a certain point, you're going to start to run out of roster spots. And the last thing you want to do is, Vancouver's a perfect example, is lock yourself into a 21-man roster because you spent too much on middle six or bottom six guys.
Yeah.
And with the talent in the pipeline, I don't know how long Raquel should be expected to be a top six guy on this team. So,
yeah, I also think you take the risk that even if he is the perfect fit, and that's the point we're arguing here, is like, if he is the perfect passenger, and that's what we're saying, I still think you let him go and you take the risk that Perreault could do the same, or that somebody else could do the same, because the contract that you're going to lock Raquel into at his age, and one rebound season versus two or three of not so great years, you know, there's just not enough there for me to say, okay, like, I want to pay him four and a half to five and a half because he's the perfect passenger. I'll take a risk that Perreault on his entry level contract, or somebody else we can get for a lot cheaper, even Comtois, could step in and do the same. And Shane made a point in here, and it'll be the last thing we get to, because I gotta head out soon. But he said, I think you could argue that Raquel makes sure they do the stuff we love. I don't think that's necessarily true, because if that was true, that would mean Raquel would be kind of the defensive force of that line, creating space for Zegras and Milano to do what they're doing. But Zegras and Milano have been better defensively than Raquel have this year. Raquel's been a very good goal scoring option, which is what he's there to do, to be the secondary shot option when Zegras and Milano are kind of making things happen with the, you know, their passing ability. That Raquel kind of comes into the zone late and is a secondary option to that, and he's been really good at that. But I think you can get others who can just do that the same, right? Like, I don't think, and that's not a detriment or, you know, a negative to Ricard Raquel. It's just, I think you can get others for cheaper and some, or promote from within, where you don't have to pay this guy at 29 to be that guy when you already have done that with a few other guys and are stuck in some contracts with Henrik and Silverberg. I like Henrik. He's done well this year. I like Silverberg and his fit with Lindstrom. I don't think you can have three of those guys on the team when you've got this many young players within a couple of years of making the Ducks roster. I love the way they played this year. They're a great team this year. They're better than I expected. All the credit to them, but you can't abandon the plan you have of the young players on the way and the what you've worked so hard to have one of the best prospect pools in the system to keep this guy around just because he's doing well this year on your best line. I there's no argument for me at all this year. I will not be convinced that the Ducks should keep Rickard Rakell. I have like a 2% chance of maybe being convinced that Josh Manson should stick around. Lindholm's the 50-50 argument for you, but for me, Rickard Rakell needs to get traded. And it's not because he's played bad or anything like that. I just do not want to lock him down to a contract because he's played well on a good line in a contract year. I'm not ready to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, and I mentioned this to you a couple weeks ago, and Brett hit it right on the head for me, is like, I think the best option, especially if this team keeps this up, is to let him walk. They did it with Bolesky, and I understand Bolesky wasn't necessarily going to get the same kind of return that Rakell might, but like, let's not kid ourselves. Bolesky like had a great year that year, and the Ducks could have gotten something of note for him. You know, he ended up getting like a $5 million fucking contract or something stupid from
the Rangers or Boston.
Boston. I would be much more open to just letting him walk. I think that's probably the best way to do it. The other thing I wanted to say is also look at David Perron. He has been a St. Louis Blue 75 times, and who knows, maybe Rakell could be our David Perron and he could just keep coming back like a boomerang.
As long as he takes David Perron money and only makes $4 million and puts up 70 point seasons, then I'm all there for it. So.
I know you have to go, so we'll just say a couple things. Me and Eddie are going to do a dumb fun episode tomorrow morning, which we'll try to get out early in the week. And then tomorrow at Yorba Linda lamppost will be the watch party, and Pat's going to be pissed because I'm tapping my table. But me, Jay, and Pat will all be there, and apparently some of you are going to come because you're sickos. But the game is at 4. I think we're supposed to be there around 3:30. So yeah, come say hi, even if it's just for a couple of minutes or whatever. It should be fun. So
quick hits. Win tonight? Yes or no?
No.
Win tomorrow?
No.
And Wednesday, Seattle, Friday, Arizona.
Oh, Seattle, yes. Arizona, yes.
I think win tonight, lose tomorrow, win Seattle, win against Arizona. There's only 2 games next week, so it's a nice little break after 5 games. Well, I would love to see another 5-game week because I love watching the Ducks 5 times in a week, but they need the rest. It's been a tough road trip, and they're back home next week. So everybody listening who's in the area, you get to go watch them play Seattle and Arizona next week. So, and Arizona might not even have a home arena at that point, so they might have to play the rest of their games at Honda Center. So that's for another day. But hey, we didn't expect to go live today, but thanks for everybody who came out from what is most of you a Saturday morning. Like Steven said, we'll be doing a Patreon show tomorrow, so if you want to check that out and you're not part of our Patreon, go to patreon.com/forevermighty, and we're going to be putting out that trade show tomorrow, and I'll be back Monday with Ducks Morning Brew.
You said it, not me. I tried to give you more time than that.
I'll be back Monday with Ducks Morning Brew, and we'll be back next weekend with another weekly show. Appreciate you guys coming out, and we'll see you then.
Bye, everybody.